Today on Maine Calling, ICE agents, protesters, warrants, and the law. When's the last time you thought about the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution? Before this week, did you even know what it was? The Fourth Amendment provides protection against unreasonable search and seizure. It is the reason for warrants. But what's the difference between a judicial warrant and an administrative warrant? And when, if ever, can an ICE agent enter a home? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss some of the legal principles under scrutiny right now. Not just the Fourth Amendment, but also the First Amendment. When are protesters and those videotaping ICE agents protected, and when are they not? Do non-citizens have the same rights on U.S. soil as citizens? What exactly is the concept of rule of law? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and offering custom homes in Quarry Cottages, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And by Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. As we continue our coverage of the immigration and customs enforcement operations in Maine, we focus today on legal principles and the rule of law. We're going to learn what the nation's law says about protections and rights in various scenarios for immigrant families, protesters, bystanders, and others relating to ICE activities in Maine. My guest today, Carol Garvin, who is legal director at ACLU Maine, and William Harwood, who is a retired attorney who was a partner at Verrill Dana and served as Maine public advocate. We invite you to join the conversation as you watch the news, as you read the newspaper, as you listen to NPR. Do you have questions about what the Constitution lays out and how laws are enforced? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. There are so many legal principles as we see this surge in ICE activity. So let's start with the Fourth Amendment. Bill, if we see a police show on TV, and they're asking a judge for a warrant for a search or a wiretap or something like that, this is because of the Fourth Amendment, correct?
That's absolutely right. The Fourth Amendment is one of our critical pillars of our justice system. It's been around since the beginning of our country. Our ancestors did not want the British coming into their homes without some protection. And the Fourth Amendment says you must have probable cause, and it must be determined by an independent judge. And that's really important here in what's going on with ICE.
Carol, we've seen footage of ICE agents at people's front doors demanding entry. What is your guidance for people who face this situation?
Sure. So it's really important. The Fourth Amendment, like many of the critical foundational protections in our Bill of Rights, they apply to people. They don't just apply to citizens. They apply to citizens and not non-citizens alike. And so the Fourth Amendment protects everyone from unreasonable searches and seizures. And in the context of when you're in your own home, the Fourth Amendment really has its highest and most forceful protection. And so in general, the rule is that there needs to be a judicial warrant in order for law enforcement to enter your own home. And so if people are at their door and someone is knocking and they think it might be ICE or other law enforcement, they do not have to open the door. And they can say, and we advise people in our Know Your Rights materials, to ask for the judicial warrant to be slid under the door. And if there isn't a judicial warrant, if there's something else, or if there's nothing, then you can keep your door closed and not let them enter.
And Carol, how does a regular person know what a judicial warrant looks like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think many of us, even many lawyers, may not have had to think about this that much until recently. But yeah, there's a judicial warrant. That means it went to a judge, a neutral, arbiter, and then the judge decided that there was enough evidence, there was probable cause to support the entry or the search. There's the key thing about a judicial warrant is that it would be signed by a judge. And it would usually have something along the lines of, the District Court of Maine, the name of the court in Maine at the top. And we have pictures actually of these on our website so people can check it out. And so the other kind of warrant, which is sometimes called an administrative warrant, is really just an internal document that was prepared by DHS, by ICE officials. And so that's not the kind of neutral, adjudicated warrant that is required.
Yeah, Bill, and I want to follow up with this. Carol is emphasizing a judge's signature, but there is this apparent ICE memo we've all read about that gives sweeping permission for ICE agents to forcibly enter homes because of, as she said, an administrative warrant. How should we all think about this? I mean, this is something that ICE agents have been told.
This is very disturbing, this secret memo that has now come out. A couple of things that your listening audience should know. The administration did not want it to come out. It came out from a whistleblower. It turns out that the Office of General Counsel at DHS issued this memo last spring to the agents saying that they didn't need a judicial warrant. It's just plain wrong as a matter of law. The bottom line is, agencies of government don't get to reinterpret the Constitution. They don't get to change the interpretation of the Fourth Amendment. That job is reserved to the United States Supreme Court, and the Office of General Counsel cannot change, come up with a new interpretation of the Fourth Amendment that may suit their needs for the moment.
Well, that sort of leads to my other question is the interpretation of the Fourth Amendment that you're both talking about, is that sort of universally accepted in legal circles in the courts, or is this one of those things that's controversial?
I'm sure there are people out there who want to change the rules, particularly in this climate for immigration. But until the Supreme Court acts, it is well established and well settled law. You need a judicial warrant to break down the door of a private home to go in and arrest someone. That's just something we learn in law school in the first year, and it isn't really up for debate.
All right, Carol, let's talk about the First Amendment. We have seen protests in many Maine communities. When are protesters protected by their First Amendment rights, and when are they not protected by their First Amendment rights?
Yeah, so the First Amendment protects anyone who is observing, protesting, recording, video recording, law enforcement doing their job in public. And we have really long settled law in our circuit, the First Circuit, some of the strongest and most protective law for people who are recording what's happening, what law enforcement is doing in their neighborhoods and their communities. So when someone is, taking out their phone and doing a video recording, they're exercising their First Amendment rights, and that is protected by our Constitution.
Okay, so Carol, but what about protesters? Big protests going on. For example, if protesters block a street, is that legal?
So there's different rules. If there's impeding of public streets, then those generally there are regulations for that, and there's permitting requirements depending on where you're protesting. If you are going to be in, for example, a street, then there may be permitting requirements. If you're just on a sidewalk, for example, then there often aren't even permitting requirements. And so there can come into play some limitations if you are impeding, for example, traffic, or certainly if you're interfering with law enforcement activities. But generally, there's broad rights to protest and to observe, what our government's doing.
Well, Bill, Carol's using a word that we've been using a lot this week, which is impeding. When is somebody, and we almost all of us carry smartphones now, ability to videotape what's going on, or I'm using the word videotape lightly, I know loosely, I know that there's no video involved. But when somebody brings out their smartphone and films what's going on, when are they impeding law enforcement and when are they not impeding law enforcement?
Yeah, this is an important just question that's going to come up. We have robust First Amendment rights in this country. We ex encourage people to come forward and criticize and protest their government. The only time where this criminal statute of impeding comes in is if you are knowingly and intent willfully interfering with the government official doing their job, and simply filming them from an appropriate distance is always almost never going to be impeding. We must remember that First Amendment is a robust part of our law. If you go back to the civil rights and Martin Luther King and Congressman John Lewis, standing up to government when there is a protest and when government is misusing its powers is something that should be celebrated. It should not result in the death and shooting of protesters.
So, Carol, what is your guidance, your practical on-the-ground guidance about this reasonable distance? If you have your phone and you see something that you want to record, how close can you be? And, what is considered a reasonable distance?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it is hard to say sort of, you should be 3 feet or 8 feet or those kinds of things really do depend on what the circumstances are. But, as Bill said, the law is that there needs to be a showing that a reasonable law enforcement officer would conclude that their activities were getting interfered with. And so that's an objective standard, and it's really important to emphasize it's not just, that the law enforcement officer might prefer to not have you record or feels, upset by that or subjectively kind of, offended by it. None of that justifies anyone saying that you can't record, and that isn't interference. Instead, it needs to be actually that you are in that moment interfering with law enforcement activity. And so it'll depend on the circumstances, but if you're at a reasonable distance away, then you're not having any kind of physical interference with what's happening. And just the fact that the law enforcement officer might prefer that you not be there, or that might be, annoying to them, that does not justify their taking away your First Amendment right to record.
Bill,
One
what
rule
about?
of thumb,
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Jennifer, that sometimes is touching a law enforcement officer is probably going to get you in trouble for impeding. So if you are far enough away that you cannot reach out and touch the law enforcement, that's a safe distance. And if they step towards you, you best step back, continue to film them, but keep that distance. And so at no point could you reach out and touch the law enforcement official.
What if you're in their path? They're heading in a certain direction and you're there.
Well, if you're impeding them in their path, then you probably do have a problem. If they need to get on the other side of you and they ask you to step away, I would recommend stepping away unless you're one of those people that is going to engage in civil disobedience, which we have a long history in our country of people engaging in civil disobedience. And at that point, there should be a peaceful arrest, not a shooting, but a peaceful arrest of the person where they are taken into custody and they understand it and they're engaging in civil disobedience to bring attention to this very important issue.
Carol, we've seen lots of footage, especially from Minneapolis, but also here in Maine, of people who see ICE agents and they follow their vehicles and they honk their horns to sort of let people know there's an ICE agent here. What about that? Is that protected? Can you follow someone around honking your horn?
So I think, that it's again hard to say that specific things are legal or illegal, but I think again, if they're not interfering with the duties of the law enforcement officer, then they're simply exercising their First Amendment rights. And, I think this comes from a really long tradition of understanding that really gathering information about what our government officials do, that is at the heart of the First Amendment. Because if we don't know what's happening, then we can't exercise our rights to vote, our basic rights to protest and sort of govern ourselves, which is really the foundation of our democracy. So I think we've seen in recent days, even in Maine, how important this is. Is that people are recording or having videos up that show what's actually happening rather than sort of what we're told is happening by government officials.
Bill, let's talk about racial profiling. My understanding is that it's illegal for law enforcement to profile someone based on their appearance, based on the color of their skin. Is that the law, or is that simply best practice of law enforcement?
No, that is the law, and we're struggling with this. We now have this unfortunate statement in a recent Supreme Court from Justice Kavanaugh. Now they're called Kavanaugh stops, but it's not at all clear that this is the final word. The bottom line is our law enforcement and our prosecution should not depend on anyone's race or sex or anything. We shouldn't be singling out people because the color of their skin is darker than yours or mine. That's not the way our system of government is supposed to work. If you get pulled over on the turnpike and alleged for speeding, it shouldn't matter whether you are what the color your skin is, whether you're wearing a yarmulke or a headscarf. Those aren't appropriate criteria for determining when law enforcement can apply and enforce the laws.
Carol, can you talk a little bit more about what Bill talked about, this Kavanaugh stops? When did this ruling go down, and what does it say?
Sure. So yeah. So the I mean, first, just backing up for a minute. So the idea of the requirement of a warrant, there are exceptions. And so one of the places that the warrant requirement is a little different is when you're on public roads. And so when you're on a public road, there's a little bit of a different requirement, but there still needs to be at least probable cause to support the stop. And so applying that, which is really long settled law, courts out of California said that when ICE was doing these mass stops of people, if they were doing that based on just a hunch, based on their skin color, their ethnicity, their accent, for example, that that wasn't probable cause. And so that was illegal. The Supreme Court then intervened and they put that ruling on hold. And as part of that, the Kavanaugh concurrence that Bill was talking about said, well, you know, it's fine if people are just stopped for a little while and questioned, and that, you know, their language, for example, accent, you know, ethnicity, that's okay for that to be part of the analysis. And so that is really different from what we all thought the settled law was for many generations. That is just a concurrence from a single justice. And it also still doesn't say that your, for example, your race alone can justify a stop. So we, you know, the law remains that just your skin color or your ethnicity alone isn't enough to ever justify law enforcement stopping you. But certainly that concurrence really, you know, threw things into a lot of confusion and was very different from what we thought the law was.
And I want to ask, you know, as we talk about rights, First Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment rights, whatever our rights are, whether it's the right, somebody being read their rights or the right to a fair trial, Bill, do all of these rights apply to everyone who is in the US, or do these rights only apply to US citizens?
No, as Carol said earlier, they apply to people. The Fourth Amendment and other Second Amendment all use the word people, and they've generally, although there are slight differences, but generally we've determined that people who are part of our community, whether or not they are a citizen, have the basic rights in our Constitution. And this is all part of what we call the rule of law. It is so important that all of us be comply with and protected by the same rules, regardless of our status. And that is something that this administration has not been following. And it's really important that your listening public understand that the rule of law applies to everyone equally.
All right. Well, we do need to take a quick break. We are talking about the legal principles in question right now, the confusion around some of the things we're all seeing and hearing about during this ICE activity in Maine. You can give us a call with your questions, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are discussing questions about legal rights as they relate to immigration enforcement and what it means to abide by the rule of law. Joining me today, Bill Harwood, who's retired public advocate for the state of Maine and a longtime attorney with expertise in public utilities, and Carol Garvin, who is legal director at ACLU Maine. Oh, funny, a little dyslexia there. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you wondering about the First Amendment? Are you wondering about the Fourth Amendment? Bigger questions. Send us an email, talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now on the line is Aaron Fry, who is the Attorney General for the state of Maine. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me and appreciate this conversation.
I understand there's a new tip line, an email tip line for people to report violations they've observed. Why did you decide to do this? How does it work?
Yeah, well, let's first start with the email. It's citizenreporting.org@maine.gov. This was an email that my office set up because we were seeing an increased number of reports of the way in which federal law enforcement officers were engaging with Mainers may not be consistent with the obligations under the Constitution and law that there should be. We have seen other states, in particular Minnesota and Illinois, but also California, Oregon, North Carolina, other states where we've had what I'll call a surge like this, in which there have been these patterns and practices that really are inconsistent with our understanding of what's appropriate for law enforcement generally, but in particular federal law enforcement to be doing. So in order to understand how folks here in Maine were being policed during this surge, we want to try to get reports coming in directly to the office. We've appreciated, the support. I'm thinking of like the ACLU of Maine, of the Maine Immigrant Resource Center. We've been getting reports in from some different places. We thought it important to make sure that we keep track ourselves of what was going on by having folks report right into us.
Okay. My understanding, the tip line's been up and running, 48 hours? What kind of response has there been so far? Have you had many calls?
I don't have the exact number. We have had different emails coming in. Yeah, and there are a number of folks who are using their First Amendment right to express how they feel about the efforts of my office. We are getting some more legitimate pieces of information that we're going to work to follow up on. But really important, what would be helpful to hear from people when they do email in is if they include the date of the incident that they might be talking about, the location that it happened, names of any witnesses that might be involved. If they happen to know the name of the officer that's involved, that would be great, although it's probably difficult given that they're masked and they're typically not identified by an individual name. Also, the contact information of the person that's reporting, and a brief description of the incident. We are not asking that folks include video or photos if there's information that is provided. And again, so far, we've received a couple of different reports that we're going to be following up on. We'll follow up and ask for those things. Please also remember FOA, the Freedom of Access Act here in Maine, does apply to the office. So please be mindful about what you send, because while we hope we'll be able to protect it as investigatory material, we can't guarantee that we'd be able to withhold it upon request.
Attorney General Fry, when you say that you will follow up, what actions do you take, can you take, once you receive the emails from the public?
Well, I have a couple of folks, attorney, non-attorney, who are looking at each email that comes in, as well, by the way, as considering material that comes in from outside agencies where somebody might feel more comfortable calling. I get that folks might not necessarily think to call my office first, but I have an attorney and a non-attorney. They're looking at each one, trying to determine whether or not there is something about what happened that might be actionable, right? At least the extent to which Maine might have some interest that it can assert in order to protect citizens, or to help maybe clear up what is developing as a misunderstanding about how Mainers, folks here in Maine are being policed by federal law enforcement agencies. Let me also add that we are watching with great interest what's going on, particularly in Minnesota. And in Illinois, by the way, both states, Illinois and Minnesota, have filed cases against the federal government for the way in which the residents of their states are being policed by federal law enforcement agencies. We are watching what happens there with those states trying to protect those living in their state. We're developing the evidence here in Maine in the event that it arises to that. In which we might have to similarly protect those who are here in Maine from what may be unconstitutional or unlawful policing tactics.
Thank you so much for calling in. Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry. We have so many calls coming in. We'll start with Patty calling from Clifton. Hi, Patty. Go ahead.
Hi. What I was wondering is, and this is my fear, is that we have the right to defend our own homes, even using lethal force if someone breaks in. So if ICE agents come and they break down your door without your permission, where does that put you? Do you have the right to defend your home, lethal force, or what? I mean,
yeah, good question, Patty. Carol.
Yeah, so I think, you know, even though we're seeing the secret memo getting leaked that or put out by a whistleblower, that there has now been new guidance from the administration saying, you know, they don't need a warrant. We haven't heard a lot of examples of that happening in Maine yet. Certainly, if people do experience that, let us know, you know, go to the tip line that Attorney General Fry just mentioned, because we would like to hear about that. But I do just want to say, so far, we haven't heard direct accounts of that. But certainly, if that happens, if you don't consent to entry and the officers break down your door, then it's especially important to know your rights. So first, you know, say that you don't consent to the entry. But second, if that hasn't worked and they are in your home, then our advice is to not interfere, not obstruct with ICE, not you know, put up a fight in any way, because that can lead to more difficulties. And so instead, you want to clearly and calmly assert your rights. You know, easier said than done. It is a very difficult thing to stay calm in a really stressful situation like that. But, you know, our recommendation is to stay calm, assert that you want to remain silent, assert that you don't consent to the entry, but not interfere and not certainly use any kind of lethal force or other force against the agents.
Yeah, I understand that that's your advice, but I think Carol, Patty is asking a what if question, and maybe I'll turn to you, Bill. What if someone breaks down your door and you shoot them?
Yeah, that is not an appropriate response, because we don't want any loss of life on either side. We don't want to see law enforcement lose their life, and we don't want to see undocumented immigrants, and we don't want to see protesters. So you resorting to firearms and gun violence is not the appropriate answer. But I think, as Carol says, document it and continue to assert that it's not a non-consensual. And this is where, you know, with Attorney Fry's leadership, we need to hold these people accountable, and they need to be forced into the courtroom where a judge can hold them accountable. I was very pleased to see that the chief judge in Minnesota this morning is ordering ICE to appear in his courtroom on Friday to start to explain and answer some of these questions as to why they're behaving the way they are and how they can justify them. So we really need the courts to be strong. We need our judges to be strong, and we need folks to bring these transgressions to the attention of our judges.
Patty, thank you for your question. We'll go to Westbrook and Peter. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I just want to know if the attorneys could pick apart this the guidance about slipping under your door. And, you know, we're talking, this is Maine calling. Most of us have pretty airtight homes, 0 degrees out at night. There's no gap under my door that I could slip a piece of paper. So if that's the case, maybe thinking about some more practical advice for in Maine, what we could actually do, because I can imagine an ICE agent saying, sorry, no gap, and then pushing in or something like that.
Yeah, Carol, if it's not so easy to push a warrant under a door, what else could they demand?
That's a really good question. I think I hadn't thought of that because I have an old drafty house where there's plenty of a gap to slide something under. But yeah, I mean, I think if there's any kind of glass, you know, you could obviously have them put the warrant up to that, whether it's on your door or a window next to the door, some way that you can see what they are holding up. But, you know, I do think if there's any way to not open the door, that is what you want to do. And so hopefully there's either a tiny gap or some kind of transparent surface nearby on the door or the window that you can ask that to be put up. The problem is, as soon as you open the door, then the government can say, well, that was indicating consent. And consent is just a, you know, exception to the warrant requirement. So you don't want to have anything suggesting that you're consenting to the entry. But yeah, it's a tricky question in Maine if you have a really airtight house.
So Carol, courts have found if somebody rings your doorbell and you open the door, you are consenting to have them enter your home?
Right. Yeah, that's part of the analysis. And so that's one of the reasons it's really important to not open the door. And often, there might not even be an indication of who it is. We've heard of reports of, ICE not saying who they are. So it is important to be on guard. And if it's anything unfamiliar, you're not expecting it, to say, I want to see, what's the reason you're here. You can certainly ask who the officers are, what their reason for being there is, and ask them to show you the warrant.
We'll go to Bud, who's calling from Orland. Hi, Bud. Go ahead.
I really appreciate you doing this show. I was a police officer exactly 50 years ago this year, until 1980. And so much here has to do with what the administration has handed out to the culture of ICE. The rule of law is the rule of law, but if the culture from the administration, from the president down, says, these people are all less than, so go ahead and beat them up. And when I was a police officer, it was 10 years after the Democratic convention in Chicago. And I was in the western suburbs of Chicago. They sent us to school. We learned Gestalt, the language of, I hear you're screaming and yelling, you sound angry. They taught us therapeutic restraint. We did everything to de-escalate. And what you see with the ICE agents is they're throwing people to the ground. Their faces are hitting the sidewalk. Any police officer in any state now, in the state of Maine, county sheriff, local police officer, state trooper, they would be fired for that behavior. So this is out of the scope and protocol of normal policing. And I'd like your guest to maybe address how do you deal with that?
Well, thank you, Bud, for your call. Either of you?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I really appreciate the call. And I think it's so important for your listeners to understand that these criticisms of ICE and the federal law enforcement is not a generic criticism of all law enforcement. Here in Maine, state and local police generally do a very good job and are very respectful of people's Fourth Amendment and First Amendment rights. And it's really important that they not all get lumped together. The bottom line as to how do we address this? We need people to speak up. We need our elected officials to speak up. We need our congressional delegation to hold ICE accountable. And ultimately, it comes down to the ballot box. This is not behavior at the highest level of government that we want. And the way to change it is to have the media, the Congress, the courts, and ultimately the voting public all speak with a strong voice. Saying this is not okay.
Bud, thank you so much for your call. An email here from Todd. If federal agents are breaking local laws, can they be arrested by local authorities?
Yeah, that's a really tricky question. So there are situations where local authorities can prosecute. There's a bunch of hurdles to that, and I think we're seeing this, play out in Minnesota. I mean, the first is that in order to prosecute, the local authorities need information. And I think what we're seeing in Minnesota is there's obstruction. The local authorities are not able to even get basic information about what's happening. So that's, a first hurdle. And then the second is when there's prosecution in court, generally federal officers don't have to be hailed into a state court. And so they can ask that to be moved to the federal court. And so there's sort of a number of different hurdles to actually holding people accountable. It doesn't mean that it's impossible. And I think it's really important for people to know there's not sort of absolute bars on it. It is tricky, but we are so happy, the Attorney General's office is looking at tips and investigating. And I think we've seen in Minnesota already where the state is stepping up, and I think we'll see that here as well, where the state can make real efforts to hold officers accountable, including federal officers.
Yeah, Jennifer, your listeners may have heard of this thing called qualified immunity that gets thrown around, which law enforcement does have some legal protection. But at the bottom line, murder is murder. And if they are acting outside the scope of their authority and discharging their firearm in ways that are not lawful, they can be held accountable.
All right. Well, we are talking about legal principles that we are hearing in the news right now around this surge in immigration and customs enforcement activity. I want to note that tomorrow on Maine Calling, we'll be talking about immigration law. We'll be talking about the different immigration status that people have and what that means and what it has meant before this surge and what it means today. But right now we're talking about the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the whole idea of the rule of law. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are discussing the First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, civil rights, and the rule of law. With me, Carol Garvin with ACLU and attorney and policy advisor Bill Harwood. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email at talk@mainepublic.org or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. So many questions coming in. We'll try to get to as many as possible during this hour. We'll go to Vinny calling from Brownfield. Hi, Vinny. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the show. Yes, I'm calling about when President Reagan and his administration tried to pass the no-knock bill, which was warrantless searches, and it was defeated. And the other bill they tried to pass was preventive detention. If a person appeared they might commit a crime, or they were suspicious of being in any group that might commit a crime, they could be detained. And that was also defeated. So I wanted to bring those two points up. And also, is ICE subject to mandatory alcohol and drug testing random, as most people are that have involved with public safety?
Yeah, do either of you know the answer to that question?
I'm sorry, no.
Yeah.
Good question.
Go ahead, Carol, were you going to say something?
I don't know the answer to that, but I do think, you know, it's worth raising that there are sometimes efforts to, you know, change the basic constitutional right against search and seizure being unreasonable. And I think it's important to say that Congress, whether it's an internal memo from DHS, that can't change the Constitution. And so the basic Fourth Amendment requirement of a warrant, that has been the law for now, you know, hundreds of years. And so I think that really is underscored by this recent, you know, leaked memo that we see, that memo, the administration can't kind of change the rules in the middle of the game. And so any effort to do that, you know, will have to go to the courts. And I think given the precedents we have, it's very likely to fail.
Vinny, thank you for your question. We'll go up to Bar Harbor and John. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. Just quickly, I want to thank your caller, Bud, a few calls back, for the perspective he gave on local law enforcement. I'm calling about a Fourth Amendment issue. In 1959, the Supreme Court decided Abel versus the United States. And in that case, the decision was made that administrative warrants issued by immigration officers were sufficient for the arrest of aliens pending deportation. And this ruling has apparently been used to authorize, under alleged emergency exceptions, forced entries into homes to make arrests. And I'm wondering if either of your panelists have any perspective on Abel versus the United States. Thank you.
Yeah, and the use of the word emergency situation.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll defer. There's going to be immigration experts on tomorrow, but I do think there's administrative warrants that can justify the initial arrest when a person is, for example, not in their home, but in public, and if there's certain really expedited situations. But that's not any kind of a general exception to the warrant requirement, and certainly doesn't, to my knowledge, doesn't in any way mean that you don't need a warrant to enter someone's home.
All right, John, thanks for your question. We'll go down to Elliot and Lance. Hi, Lance, go ahead.
Good morning. How are you doing today? Thank
Good.
You for taking my call. I apologize because I'm a little under the weather, but I think this is a very important episode, and I just wanted to state I'm a federal employee. I won't tell you who I work for, but I'm a federal employee. I think it's disingenuous to keep calling the ICE agents officers. They are not officers. They work for the Department of Homeland Security. They do not abide by the same normal rules and regulations for whether it's cause, search and seizure, home entry, or crowd control, or even the use of force. this is very important. Everyone should be the only people that can rein in whether the executive branch, whether it's Republican or Democrat, that's in power is Congress. Everyone should be focusing their efforts on being in front of the Capitol building or their congressman's home and making sure that whatever party is standing by allowing this to happen starts to get off, starts to move and to put guardrails in and to protect their constituents. That's the only way this will stop.
Lance, thank you. I want to go back to the beginning of what Lance was talking about, this distinction between being an officer or not being an officer. Bill, do you agree with Lance, and why is that important?
Yeah, there are some distinctions between ICE agents and general, you know, federal law enforcement. We think of the FBI and other agencies. And I think what he's getting at is this problem where the ICE agents are not adequately recruited, trained, supervised, and held accountable. What we have is a law enforcement agency that is out of control. And I think this is where Congress has to step in. They're not abiding by the same kind of practices and procedures. And it's really important that our law enforcement people are recruited and trained and supervised and held accountable in order to make sure that they don't overstep their bounds and essentially deny American people their constitutional rights.
And I just want to jump in to just say, you know, I think it's right that often ICE agents believe that they are playing by their own rules and can kind of make their own interpretations. I don't think the law supports that. There's not sort of an ICE agent exception to the Fourth Amendment, to the First Amendment, to due process. And so this is why everyone knowing their rights and being able to bring those forward and us being able to hold people accountable in court is really important because they are bound by these basic constitutional rights.
An email from Melody. What are the rights and responsibilities of the ICE agents? Is it legal for them to wear masks so they can't be identified?
So this is obviously an area of a lot of controversy, and several states have enacted laws saying that all, you know, all law enforcement, ICE, as well as local and state law enforcement, have to have their face visible. So I think California has done that, a couple of other states. Those, I think, will be challenged in court, and those challenges haven't played out yet. But I think it's a really controversial area. I do think it's important to just say, secret police, having secret police from our, you know, from for many, many decades has been a thing that we do not permit in our society, in our government. And so I think this is a real return to a really dangerous idea of having, you know, secret police where you can't tell who is coming into your neighborhoods and enacting this kind of force or violence.
Yeah, it's worth just mentioning here that your state and local police do not wear masks, and with good reason. We want them to identify themselves and hold them accountable.
We'll go to Elizabeth calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi. I think I've turned my radio off. Thank you for taking my call. My question is breaking and entering into a personal vehicle defiant of Fourth Amendment?
Ah, if you're in your car, Carol, do you have the same rights as if you're in your home?
Yeah, so you still have rights under the Fourth Amendment, but they are somewhat lessened when you're in your car, and actually even a little bit less if you're sort of just on the street. So there's different kind of levels of protection. Your home is your paramount sort of most protection. If you're in your car, then the officer needs probable cause in order to stop and detain you. And so, again, they still can't, you know, stop and enter your car just based on a hunch, certainly not just based on, you know, your perceived ethnicity or race. And so those things are still not allowed, but you don't need a warrant in order to stop or detain someone in a car on the public roads.
Elizabeth, thank you. Go ahead, Bill.
Your listeners know, when you get pulled over in a car, law enforcement does have the right to ask for license and registration and insurance. So those are normal things and you cannot refuse that request.
All right. Elizabeth, thank you. Let's see. We will go to Charles calling from South Portland. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for the program. This is a follow-up question, maybe to several of the questions and answers that we just heard. But let's assume that an agent shows up at my door, or somebody claiming to be an agent, and I hesitate to even ask it, because I don't want to give copycats ideas, but let's say somebody shows up at the door, they're wearing camo, they're wearing a vest, they're masked, and they claim to have the right to enter my home for whatever reason they seem to think they can. They have not identified themselves as a federal, state, or local agent, and yet their assumption is that I should just trust their word and that they should gain entry. What rights do I have?
Well, impersonating a law enforcement officer is a felony, correct, Bill?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, as Carol said earlier, you know, do not open the door and ask to see the judicial warrant and slip it under the door, show it to a window. And essentially, it is okay to force an ICE agent to identify themselves and show their authority.
If somebody feels as though a situation like Charles is describing is happening, that they may be in danger, that it may be a dangerous person at their door, and they call 911 and it's an ICE agent, what happens?
Well, we've seen this from time to time. There was an incident last summer in New York that really caught my attention. The ICE agent was dragging a woman out of her apartment in New York City. She was terrified. She didn't know why she was. She thought she was being detained by criminals and going to be taken off and the subject of some violent crime. And a local police officer who was there said, "Stop. I will take control of this. We will put this woman in a police car and we will take her down to the police station where ICE can do its proper procedure." So there are situations in which the ICE agents make it absolutely terrifying for these people, not knowing whether they're being detained by a government official or a regular criminal.
Charles, thanks for your question. We'll go to Portland and Cindy. Hi, Cindy. Go ahead.
Hi there. My question was for folks that are videotaping, and I know there's been some reported incidents of the ICE agent following them home and saying, you know, basically threatening them that if you keep doing this, we know where you live, we have your information. Can that person get a temporary restraining order against either the agent or, I mean, I think probably people have license plate numbers now of these cars. I'm just wondering what they could do to protect themselves from being threatened.
Thank you, Cindy, for that question. Carol.
Yeah, that's a great question, and thanks for raising that. So, you know, this loops back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, but the First Amendment right to record is protected, and that means both that you have the right to do it, but also that you have the right not to be retaliated against, harassed, intimidated for exercising that right. And so there are certainly cases that have been brought to say that someone should not be retaliated against. And there can be, you know, for example, if you're being threatened by the ICE agent or being followed, those could be, that could be illegal retaliation. So we, you know, I certainly would suggest people use the tip line to report that to the Attorney General's office. Also, we have a specific form on our website on ACLU of Maine. If people feel that they're being retaliated against or threatened for exercising their basic First Amendment right to record things happening in public. And so we would be interested in learning about that. But in general, it is illegal to be retaliated against and have your basic First Amendment rights chilled, because that means that people are deterred from exercising those foundational rights.
And Cindy's specific question about a temporary restraining order, is that something that's possible?
Yeah, I think that what Carol's alluding to is we have something called Section 1983. Some of your listeners may be aware of it. It's our core civil rights statute. And you have certain protections and attorney's fees and whatnot to go into federal court and essentially allege that your civil rights have been violated. And at that point, a temporary restraining order could well be part of the remedy.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy, for your question. We are really tight on time, so I'm going to try to get one that might have a quick answer. Let's see here. I just lost it. Just wondering if somebody was asking the question, if someone's door is broken down, can they get reimbursed?
So I will say, that suing the federal law agents, any federal officials for damages for money can be particularly difficult. And that's because of the system we have of really giving a lot of immunity to law enforcement officers. So I would say sometimes the problem here, this isn't a recent problem. This is longstanding law that makes it difficult to hold officers accountable for money damages.
All right. Well, so many more questions, but we're out of time. Thank you so much, both of you, for spending your hour with us. That's Carol Garvin, legal director at ACLU Maine, and Bill Harwood, an attorney and retired public advocate for the state of Maine. Our sound engineer today, Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. As I mentioned, tomorrow on the program, we shift the conversation to immigration law and learn about the different categories of legal status for immigrants in Maine and why that matters. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.